Please silence all electronic devices.
Members, the nurse of the day today is...
The job we have as legislators is to decide where the lines are.
It is a very sacred and holy institution.
I'll move to amend the bill. Even the old folks
in Devon knew. He said, hey, ain't you Jesse Harris? And I couldn't deny that. I said, yeah.
I'm Elizabeth Dole, and I approve this message.
While I do not believe I did anything illegal or ever thought I was doing anything illegal...
You're fired.
North Carolina General Assembly Act.
Any further discussion or debate?
This is the WUNC Politics Podcast, and we're already up to episode number 5, almost a half dozen. Where has the time gone? They said we'd never make it, but we're on iTunes, Google Play, and at WUNC.org. I'm Dave DeWitt, Managing Editor for News at WUNC, and I'm here with Jeff Tiberi, Capitol Bureau Chief.
Hello.
And Jorge Valencia, Capitol Bureau Reporter.
Hello.
And let's get right to it. Because this is episode 5, and I am an unoriginal hack who has already run out of ideas, I'm going to borrow one from a popular television show. We're going to play a little game called Is This a Big Deal or Is This No Deal? And we're going to talk about a lot of the things that happened in the General Assembly this week and some other political topics as well. And our first topic, Senate Leader Phil Berger introduced his plan to significantly increase teacher pay this week.
The tax reform proposals that have been implemented have resulted in growth in state revenues, and the money is there on a recurring basis. Once you see the full budget, you'll be able to see the details of that.
And, Jeff, let's start with you. Is Berger's plan a big deal or no deal?
It's a big deal in the abstract, in principle, for teachers who would receive a bump toward north of $54,000 a year. That's significant, right? But at what cost? Who would pay for this? I mean, how would this be paid for? If those kinds of raises went to teachers, it would be a big deal for other state employees. Would the state significantly roll back funding for another, arm of state government? Sure. I mean, in theory, it's a big deal, but this isn't going to become a legitimate, viable option. This is not going to be law. This is not going to become a real thing moving forward. I think it's significant because behind closed doors, it's going to be a bargaining chip. It's going to be something that is used to drive budget negotiations forward. The devil's in the details, something we've said here on the podcast before, something you hear around the General Assembly a lot. The big question is, what's the catch, right? So senators have put forth big proposals before for teachers, but in the past we've seen they wanted to eliminate a whole bunch of teaching assistants, right? We saw that a couple years ago. We also saw state senators wanted to give a bump, and they also wanted to remove career status. We saw that play out in the courts. Well, we'll find out this coming week how exactly they plan to pay for this and what this is contingent upon. And we might get a hint. I mean, whatever that may be, whether that is something based on merit pay, whether that is more pay for or more voucher, I don't know what right. It is. But whatever it may be, that may be something that gets introduced on the back end of this that is actually something the Senate really wants, and they try to push that forward from a policy standpoint when the budget
right.
gets going. Does that make sense?
I mean, it does. It's what's interesting. I mean, it's significantly more a higher bump in teacher pay than the House or McCrory proposed.
Right.
Teachers are going to get some raise. And you know, it's funny because Governor McCrory was very close to the studio here as part of an event next door. And I got a chance to chat with him briefly. It was probably 45 minutes after this plan was announced, and he hadn't heard anything about it. But he was all for the teachers getting raises. But it's pretty clear that whatever raises teachers get is going to be somewhere closer to the House and McCrory version than the Senate version, which would push teachers right in the middle of the country in terms of average pay and highest in the Southeast. And even that is probably, as you said, not going to happen.
This is a budget. On scale, it's much larger than the ones we have in our lives, right? But if the average person takes home $2,000 or $3,000 a month, and all of a sudden you want to put, instead of $300 toward groceries, $520 toward groceries, okay, you can do that, but
right. coming out of somewhere.
It's coming out of somewhere else.
No vacation that year.
Right. Yeah, so to go back to the question, big deal or no deal, could be a big deal. And I think that what could be a really big deal is whatever it is, whenever we find out, wherever it is that money is going to come from.
Right. That's right. That's where the deal will come in. All right. Let's move on to the next topic here. The border between North Carolina and South Carolina may change. We're talking about a few houses and businesses near Charlotte. It's not a huge change. both the North Carolina and South Carolina legislatures would have to agree to it, as well as the governors. Jorge, is this a big deal or no deal?
Could be a big deal.
So this is how it's going to go, right?
We actually have to answer your question, don't we? Yeah.
All right. So I have to say big deal or no deal? Okay, fine. No deal for now. And the reason for that is that this is something that has been in the works for at least 20 years. The governors between the two states in 1995 decided their parts of the border have gotten blurry because some of the landmarks that were used for the maps have disappeared. We're talking about piles of rocks, trees, fence posts. And so they had to go back to survey documents from the 1700s for this. So this is something that's been in the works for a long time. This plan that the Senate approved this week, that ostensibly they have agreed on with their counterparts in South Carolina, would resolve that. But still, not everybody's happy because you have a bunch of people who suddenly are going to wake up living in North Carolina, some people who are going to wake up living in South Carolina, and there's one business
that
sells fireworks. They sell alcohol. And they are in South Carolina right now.
Right.
They would wind up in North Carolina. Yeah, they would wind up in North Carolina. So what this version does right now, this Wiley's Minimart, I believe is the name, would get grandfathered in. They would be able to sell gas with the same tax rate that they were before. They'd be able to sell fireworks. They'd be able to sell alcohol because in the new county where they'd be located at, they wouldn't be able to sell alcohol, which sounds good, but the owners aren't fully happy about it because they lose resale value of the business.
Right. If they sell their business, they lose that grandfather.
Exactly, yeah. So
big deal for them.
Big deal for them.
Right.
For now, no deal because this is still going to be a lengthy process. Maybe it'll get resolved this year. So at least for now, no deal.
Okay. Moving on. The resurrection of the Coal Ash Management Commission may happen. A bill introduced this week in the House would recreate the commission to oversee Duke Energy's closures of coal ash basins. The bill was sponsored by Representative Chuck McGrady.
The lawyers in the Speaker office, the lawyers in the pro tem office, the lawyers in our central office have all said that this bill is constitutionally on sound basis.
Jeff Tiberi, is this a big deal or no deal?
It's a big-ish deal. I'm leaning that way. Listen, you probably got the number off the top of your head. Well, there's like 130 million cubic tons. I don't know the number. There's this monumental amount of coal ash, this carbon byproduct that's just sitting in unlined pits, like 30-ish pits across the state. It's not feasible to move all this stuff. It is, the environmentalists say, and I think there are a lot of people are in agreement that this is a significant environmental risk to water supplies. So something needs to be done about it, but what can be done? So this is not only a fight about what to do and how to clean up this coal ash as is reasonably a reasonable option on the table, but it's also this fight, right, between the governor and the legislature. So I think it is a big deal that, again, they're continuing to have this conversation and they're trying to do something to clean up coal ash to some extent. They're also trying to push through some kind of legislation that will provide a permanent alternative water source to people who live near these coal ash pits, these coal ash dumps or ponds, depending on what you call them, who have water that comes from wells.
That has been contaminated.
Okay. Well, contaminated, but we don't know by what. There's a lot of conflicting scientific research. It's very difficult to determine what specific – how did that get in your water? Was it the coal ash basin nearby or was it something else? And that's where some of the fight – because you were talking about if you get water to city water or whatever to those folks, how do you make the determination where that pollution came from?
Right.
We don't know. I mean, I think there's scientists that are looking very closely at this. Some are affiliated with Duke and some are not. So it's that's the question moving forward, at least one of them.
Yes. Then the standards by which we will judge, is this contamination or where does this contamination come from? These are significant questions from, the standpoint of dealing with an environmental issue and helping people who may be at risk for having contaminated drinking water. Excuse me. The other piece of this is that it's a fight of power.
Right.
So the legislature wants to resurrect this coal ash commission, and they would actually give the governor essentially a majority control over appointments on this. They want to resurrect this thing, and they want to give the governor control over a majority of the appointees. And they say that there are a number of commissions in state government, and this is how they work. The General Assembly and the governor essentially in tandem appoint people, and you know they make decisions. They make recommendations. The governor says that this whole thing steps on his toes. It usurps his power, that it circumvents DEQ, Department of Environmental Quality. So it's a bureaucratic mess, and it is the latest infight within the Republican Party, right? Or the latest chapter of this fight between McCrory and the General Assembly. And of course, there's this weird optic because McCrory worked at Duke for 29 years. So it's a mess. And what we gather this week, what appears likely at this point, is a bill will come out of the General Assembly. They will pass it. The governor will veto it. The General Assembly might override it if they have enough votes. And if they override it, the governor will sue, as he's already done in this instance. And ultimately what that means, at least from one perspective, from this perspective, is that the whole thing just gets delayed. It gets kind of the can gets
and
kicked down the road.
That increases the cost, you know.
And
what's interesting to me is sort of what you were just hinting at. There are these three, essentially three individuals who are taking the lead on this. There's Governor McCrory, Senator Berger, and lest we forget the Dan River thing that started all this is right in his
right
area.
In his district,
that's his
right,
town.
Yeah.
His backyard.
And he has a distinct interest in this, obviously. And then Representative Chuck McGrady, who's a Republican from Henderson County in the mountains, former director of the national director of the Sierra Club. And so he's got a distinct interest in environmental issues. So the three of them clearly are trying to work something out, but they clearly have disagreements on how to do it. And as you pointed to, Jeff, this delays what happens, and all that does is increase the cost and leaves that coal ash in the ground for a longer period of time where it could potentially contaminate things even further. That's the point of, say, the Southern Environmental Law Center and other environmental groups. So,
and let us not forget about these people.
Big-ish, but it's a big deal.
It's a big deal.
But wait, I didn't weigh in on it.
No, you didn't.
Go ahead.
You get a chance now after the fact.
Well, I was going to say it's a big deal because so far the Department of Environmental Quality has ranked all of the ponds to be at a risk level high enough that they all have to get excavated, which is extremely costly and will take a really long time. And therefore, Duke Energy, which owns these ponds and would have to foot the bill, doesn't necessarily want to do.
Passing it on to customers, it should be done.
And so with this bill, all of that process that the Department of Environmental Quality went through to rank those ponds, it would get done all over again.
Right.
So it's possible that some of those ponds would not get that same classification anymore. So
And
for that, I think it's a big deal.
That's right. And that's a great point. And initially, when the Coal Ash Management Commission was put into place, they were the ones who DEQ was going to go to with those exact ratings, and then the Coal Ash Management Commission was going to determine if they'd done a good job or not, or move that forward to the legislature. So that's really what Chuck McGrady wants to install back in, is that layer of oversight before it gets to the legislature so it doesn't come straight from DEQ. And that, to me, is an interesting political aspect.
Yeah, it seems, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like the General Assembly perhaps does not trust the Department of Environmental Quality as much as
they've said as much. Yeah. They do not like DEQ. They do not trust.
It's not open warfare, but it's close.
It's close.
Yeah. All right, moving on. Again, big deal or no deal. House Bill 2 is a big deal, obviously. At the end of our podcast, we're going to hear Jorge's story on how businesses are trying to rebrand themselves and how the state, they're trying to rebrand the state as well in the wake of HB 2. But was HB 2 a big deal this week? Did anything happen that we need to know about?
Not a big deal. There were things that happened that are interesting, namely that we have the state's best-known Republican financier, Art Pope, who is spearheading an effort to create a bipartisan committee to try to find some sort of resolution to what right now is an impasse. That's very interesting. Not a big deal right now because it's just an idea right now.
Right.
And then we've got also our senior U.S. Senator, Richard Burr, who made comments publicly saying that perhaps the General Assembly, quote, botched this whole process. That doesn't look great.
No. And, he included Charlotte City Council in that as well, saying that it was botched on both sides. But the fact that he is criticizing the General Assembly is not insignificant at all. Yeah.
Nope, it's not. And that's not something he makes a habit of doing.
Right.
Let's, you know, remind folks that he is in an election year. He's looking for a little bit of political cover. No, I don't think we had any major developments in House Bill 2 this week. There certainly will be big developments coming down the pipe as this thing plays out in the courts. And, you know, there may very well be other curveballs and other other big announcements that pop up.
Okay, good. Lightning round time. So shorter answers. That's what lightning round means. Let's see if we can do this. The bill to cut tuition at a handful of schools in the UNC system came out this week, including several HBCUs. Is this a big deal or no deal?
Oh, man, it's hard. Yes, it's a big deal. I'm not sure if it's a big deal right now because it's on hold right now. The idea behind this is to lower the tuition in some universities to increase enrollment there, but it got sent back to a committee in the Senate just yesterday. We're recording this on Friday, so on Thursday. And it seems that perhaps the universities aren't sure exactly if this is actually going to look good for them, the fact that the tuition is lower for them. Perhaps it maybe some people consider it, maybe it could cheapen the brand. So big deal, not a big deal right now.
Okay. And let's get this, the last one. Finally, the Washington Post named North Carolina one of the six or so important swing states in the upcoming presidential election this year. Let's start with you, Jeff. Big deal or no deal?
Huge deal. That's not – we can't even – that's huge. So one of the things that bugs me a little bit as we hear news about polls in the last couple of weeks and, you know, how does Trump and Clinton, Hillary and Donald fare one-on-one? We know history tells us that polls in May of election – presidential election years are really not all that sound and that trustworthy. So that's one point. The other thing that kind of irks me, is when we hear about, a national poll, you know, Trump leads Clinton by four, you know, Clinton leads by three within the margin of error. Who cares?
Right.
Where are these people they are polling? Because if you look at the last half dozen presidential elections, we know how California and New York and Mississippi and Alabama, we know how a number of states, 35 to 40 states, are going to vote. I want polling from these swing states. I want to know what the people in North Carolina and Virginia and Ohio and Florida, Colorado, New Mexico, and a couple of others, where they are leaning at this point. Because ultimately, voter turnout there and, you know, the feeling of the electorate in those that small handful of states, that's going to swing this thing. So, yeah, it's a huge deal. And let's remember, President Obama won North Carolina in 08. It was his most narrow victory, first Democrat to take it since 76 in Jimmy Carter, I believe. And then he lost it in 2012. It was his slimmest defeat.
Wait, is this still lightning round? I'm still waiting to
that was
to
lightning
chime
enough.
In here.
Okay. I mean, you were carrying very, on about – what was the last very, topic? I mean, I
– okay, I very, quick, very quickly. Yeah. Not a big deal. This is why I don't think it's a big deal.
All right.
Because we already know that North Carolina is a big deal.
The revelation of it being that is not.
This is the Washington Post or whoever telling us that is not validation that people who pay attention to politics in the state need.
Sure.
So that's it.
Yep. Well, the thing is, this is kind of a trick question because it's a huge deal. And it makes all the other things that we were just talking about also big deals because all of those particular things are going to play into who goes to the polls in November, who's going to be motivated, and how that election could end up turning out. So every one of these, especially HB2, but all these other stories, are going to motivate certain sections of people to go out and vote for their preferred candidates. And that's going to be really interesting to watch, is voter turnout and all the same things we always watch. But in North Carolina, it's even ramped up a little bit more this year. So, all right, you both passed. Good job.
Thank you.
Well done.
And we should point out that there's a second primary less than 2 weeks away, and there won't be a lot of people that turn out to vote for that, we don't think.
Right. Well, stay tuned next week with podcasts. It's going to be devoted a lot to that congressional primary, which is going to be really interesting. That does it for the WUNC Politics podcast this week. Thanks, guys, for being here.
Thank you.
Enjoyed it.
Next week, the state Senate is expected to announce its budget, and we'll talk a little bit about that as well, but we'll talk about that congressional primary. Make sure to subscribe to the WUNC Politics podcast on iTunes and Google Play. And follow all of the WUNC Politics stories from Jeff, Jorge, and Jess Clark on air and online. See you next week. And now here's Jorge's story on businesses and HB2.
It's hard to imagine a business that has not been affected by House Bill 2 in some way. Restaurants say they've had a reduction in business. Hotels have seen conference organizers cancel conventions to protest the law. And startups say some investors are steering clear of North Carolina. As Jorge Valencia reports, business owners are trying to figure out how to manage the unwanted attention.
This is how HB 2 has played out across the country.
The line has been drawn in North Carolina on the use of public bathrooms for transgender individuals.
That threatens billions of federal school dollars for the
state. The U.S. Justice Department and the state of North Carolina sued each other.
Or perhaps more telling, here's some satire from the website Funny or Die.
Ah, North Carolina, home of beaches, mountains, and an extremely homophobic governor. Now you can experience the beautiful outdoors, cityscapes, and incredible ignorance by hang gliding backwards in time.
The best-known part of HB 2 restricts the bathrooms that transgender people can use. But the law also prohibits someone from suing in state court if they believe they were discriminated against and fired from their job. In addition, it prevents cities from passing their own non-discrimination ordinances. All of this has been a huge headache for North Carolina's tourism industry. Many businesses are worried, especially marketers. Take, for example, New Media Campaigns, a startup from Carrboro that helps companies manage their public image.
No doubt. I mean, sometimes literally that, we're creating their identity.
Clay Shasso is one of the co-founders, and he knew the law was a public relations problem. So his company made a website and a logo people could print out and put up outside their shops.
So at first we had businesses against HB2, and kind of the subhead was everyone was welcome here. And then we decided we wanted to put out more of a positive message, and also we're hoping that HB2 won't become this thing that everyone knows. So we thought, well, why lead with that?
The design says in big, bold letters, everyone is welcome here. Dozens of businesses are using it now. But HB2 has definitely become its own brand. One estimate says the law has gotten more than $31 million worth of negative PR.
Well, I'll tell you what makes me more mad.
Matt Williamson is co-founder of the software company Windsor Circle. He and other entrepreneurs have long worked to make the research triangle welcoming to people from different backgrounds, not to mention highly skilled workers and investors. Williamson says even venture capitalist and AOL co-founder Steve Case canceled a visit to North Carolina.
And there's some level of which, like, if I've got to lose a contract or if I've got to not have Steve Case coming to Durham and people feel the pain of that, let's feel that pain.
The bed press is something that came up at a recent meeting of advertising professionals close to the Capitol in Raleigh. Vanessa Roberts is the diversity chair of the Triangle Advertising Federation, and she organized a workshop about HB2. She says it has marred the state's reputation.
And it's not an easy fix. And, you know, there's not a way to spin your way out of it. There's not a way to kind of buy your way out of it.
Democratic Representative Darren Jackson tried to do exactly that by repealing the law and setting aside $2 million to market North Carolina as, quote, back open for business. But House Speaker Tim Moore wouldn't let him. Moore said that Jackson's proposed policy change was out of order. Jorge Valencia, North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC.